Questions that need answers on hashtag QTNA. Thank you all my listeners for joining in on CNBC TV18's Parenting Podcast. I'm Anisha Natarajan, your host, juggling a full-time journalist job with trying to be a super soccer mom. Trying is the operative word here because you know as well as I do, it's not easy. But every moment is so worth it. On this podcast, I'm going to tackle a big dilemma parents of a child who's getting ready for college face currently. How do we help our child navigate a route to career success, especially at a time when technology is changing the opportunity grid at a breakneck speed? The simple reality is the world is a very different place today to the one we faced when we made our study and career choices. There are jobs and careers open to young people today that didn't even exist 10 years ago. New roles are getting created all the time, even as many are becoming redundant with artificial intelligence. Well, I've been lucky enough to get Pramath Rajsinha as my guest speaker today. I'm sure most of you already know of Pramath and his accomplishments. He's the man credited with setting up two outstanding higher education institutes of learning in India. ISB, that's Indian School of Business, which is in Hyderabad, and Ashoka University. Currently, he's consulting with several higher education universities to help them achieve eminence and excellence. Pramath, thanks so much for joining us on QTNA. Curious name, but it came from Urban Dictionary saying it's a cool name, so we decided to opt for it. So my first question, you've already heard my introduction, you know, the rapidly changing world we are talking about. We are aware, I mean, most parents who are reading a lot, that our education system needs a complete overhaul. But this isn't happening at school level. So we are just left wondering, how do we equip our children for future careers?
This is a very pertinent question because I think we do know what we need to equip our children for the future. And we can touch upon that later. But the problem is that neither the school education system nor the higher education system has changed rapidly enough to keep up with the times. So as parents, you are caught in a bind because you know that your kids need something different. Yet they do need to get the typical degrees and accredited diplomas that the system offers. And there isn't enough innovation in that system. So you know that you have to give your children a different set of capabilities and skills, but you can't do anything about it other than to do it outside the system. And which is why you see one way to do it outside the system is a lot of kids are going abroad, and because they're just not able to get that education here at home in India.
Let's talk about then. Over 3 lakh Indian students, I believe, go abroad, and they're spending about $6 billion. We are seeing which way the rupee is headed currently. That's a whole lot of foreign exchange that our government could save if we could just get quality education right here in the country. Why are we struggling so much?
I think this has been a problem that is getting only worse with time, but it's been a problem for a long time now that we haven't created enough institutions. And on top of that, we've allowed quality of existing institutions to really decline. And finally, we really haven't made the changes in curriculum and in the way we teach right through school and college that keeps up with the times. You look at some other countries which are benchmarks. You take a country like Finland, where I've been spending a lot of time recently. Granted that it's only a country of 5 million people, but the central government constantly revises the curriculum. And on top of that, while it recommends what curricula should be followed by schools and colleges, it gives them the freedom to innovate on top of that. It allows them to create new kinds of schools, new kinds of innovations, and rewards them for doing that because it recognizes that any system that we have in place today is not ready to train our young people for jobs of the future, which is really the question you're asking. We actually don't know what these kids are going to do in their life. And so you can't possibly put in place a system that is rigid and doesn't evolve constantly. By definition,
you need a very fluid, innovative education system ready to change along with changing times.
Absolutely. And I think what has happened is that we are so overwhelmed with numbers in our country. I like to say that, you know, you mentioned 300,000 students going abroad. I think that number is actually larger. But if you really look at the number of young Indians who need college or indeed school education, never in the history of the human race have we had to educate so many people so quickly. So fundamentally, the current model just will not work.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you look at the brick and mortar, what is called the sort of sage on stage or chalk and talk model, you have to find a different way to educate, because you cannot possibly find the teachers who will be able to teach in schools and teach in colleges to educate so many, many, many Indians.
Talking about that, you know, somehow today, coming back to our school system and then, of course, helping parents navigate this changing environment, as a parent today, we are still struggling with legacy issues of formal education, which, is, like you said, is not fluid enough. Something as simple as the strict dichotomy between humanities and sciences, we are unable to break that. We are unable to even combine, let's say, a chemistry with psychology or an eco in 99% of school systems in India. And then there is this overhang, which we read as parents, that it is STEM which is the future, science, technology, engineering and maths. But you've on the other side also gone and set up a liberal arts college, which is of eminence, that's Ashoka. Run us through these kind of boundaries, and if we have to work within these boundaries, how do we equip our children?
Yeah, you see, I think boundaries are actually over and we don't realize that. The truth of the matter is that I did a PhD more than 30 years ago in a field that has become very popular today called robotics. Even when I was doing a PhD in robotics, which was extremely specialized, right, as a PhD student, I was working with people, of course, across engineering disciplines, but I was working with people in cognitive psychology, because we were bringing in artificial intelligence techniques, which was mimicking the human intelligence, for which I had to study cognitive science. I had never studied psychology in my life, but I had to do it because I was doing a PhD in something called robotics, which had nothing to do with psychology. In my lab, we used to have people who came from linguistics background, because people were trying to teach robots how to read and listen and interpret that. We had people who came from biology, because you needed to understand how, you know, brains and limbs and so on worked. So I'm saying that even then, boundaries were already breaking down. In India, however, we seem to be completely besotted with this idea, one, that you have to study a particular group of subjects. That then leads to a career. Now, the reality is not true, because even parents who you are aiming this podcast at, if you poll the parents who are listening to us today and you ask them, what did you study in college and what are you doing now, there is absolutely no correlation. So we have somehow deeply ingrained us in our DNA that somehow specialization in a particular area leads to jobs in that particular area. That drives our entire thinking. Interestingly, there is no dichotomy between liberal arts and STEM.
Really?
Most people don't realize that liberal arts includes maths. It includes the natural sciences, physics, chemistry, biology. And at Ashoka, we do teach maths and physics and biology, where we have majors. And of course, you have to teach chemistry if people are going to major in physics and biology. And today, liberal arts has, around the world, generally embraced computer science as well. Responding to the fact, and this is one of the things that parents have to take away, that you have to be digitally very savvy.
So that is the key.
Yes. Technologically and digitally, you have to be savvy. We look at kids and we say, oh, they are wasting too much time on games or devices or iPad, whatever. The truth is that, yes, they could be wasting time on content that may not be relevant to their learning, and we do. Like in the old days, you could blame a kid for spending time reading trashy literature or spending too much time whiling away on the streets. But it's the same thing. But the fact that they're using technology so naturally is going to be very much part of their life, right?
I cannot tell you how relieved I am right now, because all of us parents are battling with digital and our teenagers and even younger children.
Yeah.
So here's my question. And this is what also worries us a little bit, that we feel that if our children to a certain combination of subjects in school in 11th and 12th is pretty much make or break years for students, because later on, other than Ashoka, which will allow you flexibility of some sorts, children get compartmentalized. So if you've done humanities, eco with math, then probably when you go to college, you still won't be allowed to take a chemistry if you like chemistry, isn't it? And that is the thing which is putting pressure on both the children and the parents. Is there a way to overcome that?
I think the first way to overcome that is to ban this notion, and I know I'm using strong words, that you enter an institution to study a particular subject.
Okay. Just trash it.
Yes. And this has become worse. Look at me. I studied metallurgical engineering at IIT Kanpur. Now going back, more than 35 years ago. I had no interest in the subject. I had no idea what metallurgical engineering was. But I got a certain rank on an exam. I badly wanted to go to the IIT in Kanpur because it had its reputation at that time as being amongst the very best of the IITs. It had the reputation of having really good students, faculty, and many of my friends from Patna in those days, you know, its close proximity to home. I was very lucky that I had a rank that I could be considered there. But all I knew is that I could study metallurgy and a few other subjects, and none of them were of interest. So I went there and I realized that I was doomed to study that for the next 4 years.
Doomed.
There was no way that I could switch. And of course, there was a process by which a very few of us could actually pass, even a tougher entrance exam to move. But, you know, a lot of people would actually drop a year and take the entrance test again to switch, just to switch. Now, I'm just making the claim that this is completely wrong. If you get into any institution in the West, you are a student of that institution. You are not a student of that department, or you are not a student of that college. And that's the biggest change that we've made at Ashoka. And you know what? What it does, it's not about the subject. It's about giving young people choice and flexibility. That's the biggest thing about the education that makes a difference, because suddenly now they have to look for meaning and look for excitement in what they are studying. And if something is not interesting or exciting, they can move. Now, you may say that, you know, they don't know, and that's true. Young people don't know. So you have to give them the choice to discover. And that discovery may not be what they want to do for the rest of their life, and that's fine. But at least during the time that they are there, they at least have a choice. College education has always been not about cramming people with knowledge, but about allowing young people to develop their own voice, to discover who they are. I'm being a bit philosophical, but that is why colleges and universities were set up. School education was supposed to provide the foundation, where you force things down people's throats and says, okay, this is a young mind, we have to give them some basic stuff that they need to know to live a good life and to solve problems and to tackle. But in college, and that's why college was always available only to a few people who were privileged, college was the time when you got to explore, discover yourself, discover what you wanted to do. Now, the moment you say, because of your rank in an exam, you can only study metallurgical engineering and you are meant for the steel industry, where is the question of discovering yourself or finding your voice? Now, this has become worse with time, because in the excuse of having to provide education to a large number of people, we are saying, oh, you can only study this, you can only do that. Based on your marks, you can only do that. And that's really wreaking havoc, I think, on our young people.
I also feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, all the headlines which are coming out. So for example, you know, there is a study by Oxford which says that 45% of the jobs will become redundant in developed countries. Forget about developing countries, which are like ours, which have a huge surge of population, which is unemployed. Is that adding to our anxiety? Is that why we are also trying to box in and find a very early niche for our kids? Because Pramath, even, you know, parents like us who are aware, well-read, are scared almost to allow our child 1 year of gap year after class 12th to just find out what they want to do. So run us with your perspective in terms of shrinking job markets, the silos that we are creating, and how to break that in our minds.
I think that it could be preying on my people's minds. I'm actually not a parent, so I'm not privy to a lot of what parents go through, but I certainly see it from the anxiety with which parents come to me for advice and send their kids to me for advice. And yes, it's not, the stresses are nothing to be envious of. But I do think that there will be jobs, but there will be jobs of a very different kind. I don't think you or I or any futurist can predict what those jobs will be.
Who knew? Why worry about them?
Yes, but the question is, therefore, what do you equip your kids with? And I think I'm not saying anything new, but everybody has now come to the realization that our kids will have 1, 2, 6, 7, 10 possible careers in their life. You've been a journalist most of your life, but you are now recording podcasts, right?
Well, my medium, which is English news on television, isn't growing.
Correct.
I have to make myself digitally relevant.
Correct. And so all of us are already being forced to switch careers. Our children will not have one career, and this has been said many times over. I'm not giving any new ideas here. Now the question is, in a world that you have to constantly keep adapting to changes in the skill requirements of careers, what do you do? And I think the one big thing that you do, which is central to all this, is teaching people a set of foundational skills that would be valid regardless.
What would these be?
So I'll come to that in a minute. The second thing that you have to do, and this is part of the foundational skills, but are very important, is teaching them to learn how to learn. So that tomorrow when things change, tomorrow when you have to go from a television English news journalist to general purpose podcasts, you know how to quickly master that. You're not trapped in your old training. The two ideas go together. And I think there are some essential habits, behaviors, attitudes that students need to be taught. These, in the old days, we would kind of develop on our own. Those of us who were lucky enough to be in environments where our parents gave us exposure, our schools allowed us to experience that, and our jobs and our work environments trained us, were lucky enough to discover this. But today I think we have to be much more deliberate about it, because the education system is not geared to providing that. Let me tell you about the kinds of skills and habits that I'm talking about. People are not taught how to think anymore. It's essential. You know, whatever we do, we watch, we listen, we hear, we process it, we apply our own judgment and ideas to it, and then we come up with a point of view. This whole process of teaching people how to think used to be done because we would encourage people to read and write and reason, and these are actually called the 3 R's of the liberal arts education. We are not doing that anymore in our schools and colleges. So somehow we have to reintroduce that. The ability to solve problems. Problems have started becoming more and more complex. There are no right answers. You can't actually Google answers. People think you can Google everything, but you can't. You know, you can Google information, but you're still confronted with problems that never have appeared before, and you're expected to solve them. So how do you approach a problem having no prior knowledge or training in that? I think you can be trained and educated to do that. How do you communicate well? I think today's day and age, communication has become very powerful. People can misuse it, especially with all the different forms of communication available, social media. At the same time, there's a huge premium. We hire people all the time and we say, oh, they're very bright, they're very smart, they're very well trained, but they don't know how to write an email or they don't know how to engage with a client. Working with others is extremely important. You know, the realization that all of us now have is that, you know, when you go to work, you actually can't do things solo anymore. By definition, teamwork has been around for a long time, but the truth of the matter is that today it's even become much more imperative, because you can't, by definition, if you can't be trained in everything you need to know, then you need to work with others. And finally, I think this whole idea of how do I think about my career? Because it's now not that I got myself trained as a metallurgical engineer and I'm going to be a steel maker for the rest of my life and then let me look after my family and, you know, live happily ever after.
Those careers are gone, right? Like 2 decades in a company.
So how does a 20-something think about their career if they don't like the software job that they have or the banking job that they have, and now they have to reinvent themselves or reskill themselves? How do you constantly think about that? So there's a bunch of these behaviors and habits that we have to now bring into our kids, which is a little bit like what you and I do today when we see a problem or when we see a situation and we react to it. We need to spread that much more widely.
And if schools are not doing it, then parents have to consciously look at developing these five skills. You know, at the start of the conversation, you mentioned something which piqued my curiosity. You said our schooling system is very rigid. How do you then probably enhance your child's learning? Online is a great way, isn't it? I mean, you could probably break the mold, do online courses. However, they're simply not recognized. Even now, most companies, the best places to work for, even startups for that matter, are looking to grab IITians rather than somebody who would have probably done an online course on the side and not passed out from a very good college. What do? You need to increase access, you need to have children think differently, learn differently, yet the system is not accepting online courses.
Yes, so I think that conflict and that sort of
difference... Will it shrink over time?
I think it will. I think already today people come in telling you that they've done this psychology course on Coursera, or they've done this digital marketing course at Udemy or edX or Udacity and so on. If you look at these online courses that are on offer, most of these companies will tell you that the second largest enrollment across the world after the United States in these English-speaking courses comes from India. And it's no surprise that people are enrolling and people are actually expecting outcomes. I know of another company that does only online higher education, and that the way they do it is that they partner with existing institutions and enable them to offer their online and distance learning courses. These are Indian institutions that are doing that. And they tell me that people are willing to pay a lot of money to educate themselves through these courses that is actually under the surface. The challenge is that this is actually happening at the level when people have already graduated from college and
Absolutely.
They are working. Because of the problems you mentioned in the school system and in the college system, people don't have time and there is no incentive for them to do this. However, I think that where this will start to change is when colleges start to incorporate these online courses into their curriculums for credit.
Absolutely.
So for example, at the Vedika Scholars program that I run, we take Wharton Business Foundations course that is offered on Coursera, and we ensure that our women in that program go through the Wharton Business Foundations course and they get credit for it, for the completion of their course. So it's not just something that they're doing on the side, but it is now integrated into the curriculum. It substitutes for something that a professor here would actually deliver in a classroom.
That's brilliant.
Right. So suddenly what happens is I'm now raising the quality to a certain level. And as people start to realize that they can use these courses to substitute for the lack of faculty and the lack of quality faculty. So suppose you have to teach accounting. Now you're constantly running around trying to find a professor who can teach accounting. You find somebody, but they do a really bad job of teaching youngsters, and accounting is complex. You can confuse them. What if you actually took the accounting course from, I'm making this up, from Duke, that is online? You let the children study that, and you have a TA or a local chartered accountant who comes in from work every evening and helps them understand the concept, but they're really being lectured by, and the materials and the tests and the assessments are all provided online. This is actually the flipped classroom model, which has been around, talked about for a long time, but this is where I think we are headed. And I think that will drive the improvement of quality. The government in India today has also started this Swayam program. So they've said, okay, we are putting all these lectures online, please go ahead and use it. Now, obviously, you know, the quality of those lectures is suspect. You can't just dump stuff, videos online and expect people to use it. But I see that movement coming. And I see that that is one thing that will open up what people should will have access to. Now, of course, the system has to allow them that access. And therefore, we do need the system to kick in. I don't know when it will happen at the school level. That's a whole different ballgame. And there people are much more protective. But you know, if you look at the success of Byju's or Khan Academy, the online part is coming in, but that flexibility and choice is not, because these are further perpetuating what already exists.
The way I can sum it up as a parent is that this, you know, sometimes we get so hard on our children when they don't score a certain percentage, thinking they are not going to make it to the top colleges. Maybe it's time for us to get a little easier on that, because like you said, it's a constant learning process. There are online courses which probably don't need you to make it to a 95%. There are multiple ways of skilling yourself today, isn't it, for jobs of tomorrow?
Yes, and Manisha, however, I do want to caution that, you know, our parents and our kids have the choices they do, and those courses are not today going to help them get into a great college. There are very few Ashokas and some of the other new universities who look at you more holistically and not only at your marks. For most people in this country, marks and entrance tests really determine your future. So the sad part is, unless that changes, there are a privileged few where parents will be brave enough to say, you know, go read a book and don't study for that exam. That's the tragedy of the problem we have. I think where this is again happening, and it's very elitist, is that those who can afford to go abroad are now rejecting this system. I think good students who yesterday would have got to an IIT or a St. Stephen's or an Ashoka are today saying, listen, I don't want to compete. I'm checking out. I'm going into an IB program. Yes, I'm going to go read my philosophy book. I'm going to take that online course. And, you know, too bad if I can't get into an Indian institution. I go study in the US or New Zealand or Canada or Finland, for that matter. And that's the tragedy that we're seeing happening, which is sad, but it's happening.
What can I say? It's not just elites or the elitist families, Pramath. It's essentially the biggest luxury that middle-class India is spending on foreign education for their children.
Yes.
But that's a whole other podcast.
Yes.
With you. But thank you so much, Pramath Raj Sinha, for joining us. Well, all that I can say is no one is more happier than we, the parents of young children, as you lead setting up of several more excellent institutes of higher learning and, you know, new methods breaking the mold for the next generation.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
EY, the global consulting firm, reported a few years ago almost half of parents are unaware of the range of options open to young adults turning 18. Which is true, isn't it? I mean, how many of us are really okay with our child saying that he or she wants to be a YouTuber or a wellness therapist? We also are becoming fearful with all the headlines we are bombarded with, talking about artificial intelligence, technology replacing jobs. But the bottom line is, we can help our children navigate this rapidly changing world of careers by giving them some freedom and space to make their own choices and supporting them. Like Pramath said, independent thinking skills, problem solving, emotional skills, getting along, communication skills,
collaboration
skills, all of those are skills which cut across any careers. We all know that, don't we? Yet it's heartening to get these answers from those who have an inside view of higher education in India. Thank you for joining me on today's parenting podcast. Drop me an email at parenting@nw18.com with your feedback and suggestions on how we can make these better.